Members, I think we'll start as an unofficial meeting until we have a quorum. We want to be respectful for those who came on time to testify, and so we will start. It's important that a couple of things that we hear before we bring the bill out. We're still planning on doing that tomorrow. A couple of things to make sure that people are aware of, maybe because they're a little different or new. We have both of them here today. We'll hear a presentation from the University of Minnesota and perhaps the Department of Ag about a BL3. I think Howell's had one of those for lunch. BL3 plant pathologen research facility to be co-located with the U and Department of Ag. And then also I thought it would be beneficial, since it is a new addition, kind of a significant item, to get a brief overview from Department of Health. Is Health? Health is doing that, I think. The forensic nursing facility, and try to come up with a better name for that, because everybody always says, what is forensic nursing? It sounds like the Quincy Medical Show or something. I don't know. But with that, we will start with the University of Minnesota, and we'll talk about the plant pathology, maybe a little bit, if you could talk to us about the level 2 containment facility that you have, the success you've had with that, and why I think it's important that we not just plan for this, which is was the Senate position, but rather go ahead and do it. I think that it has important significance to the state and our agricultural economy, and I think there's some folks here from the soybean growers too that'll have put, I think, $50,000 into it. We want to hear from them. So with that, please state your name and tell us about the BL3.
Thank you, Chairman Dorman. My name is Bev Durgan. I'm Associate Dean for Research at the University of Minnesota. And what I would like to start out today to give you an overall review of the BL2 facility and the proposed BL3 facility. I would like to have a couple people join me today also to answer any questions. The first one will be Dr. Carol Ishimaro, who is our head of our Department of Plant Pathology at the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Jim Curley, who is our research plant pathologist, that can answer any questions about some of these facilities. So, Carol and Jim, if you'd like to join me up here, that we could get started.
If I didn't get all the names, I think we can go professor, doctor, and doctor, and we'll be in good shape, and they'll think.
Okay, I do have a PowerPoint presentation. I see that there is a small issue there with the screen, but I did copy the PowerPoint presentation in your handbook, in your handout here, so it is at the very beginning, so you can take a look at that. Also, everything that I am speaking about today with this facility, there is background information in your handout so that you can take a look at it. What we are talking about today is a BL3 plant pathogen facility. BL stands for bio-level 3 building. Many of you may remember that 2 years ago we received money for a BL2 facility on the St. Paul campus. A BL2 facility is for insect research. It was opened in 2003 and is licensed to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They carry the license on this facility for us to be able to conduct research there. The BL2 was designed and built to accommodate the addition of a BL3 facility. So the BL3 facility that we are talking about now, we did plan to add this facility onto to the BL2. The BL2 facility and the proposed BL3 facility will be a partnership with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota. And the reason for that is that this facility does need to be licensed from APHIS, a federal agency, and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture then carries the license for this facility. Also, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has a quarantine officer that manages the operation of this facility and is in this facility. And the quarantine officer then will staff both the BL2 facility and the BL3 facility. This is a picture of the current BL2 facility. It's on the St. Paul campus. And if you look at the east side of that building is where we will add the BL3 facility. A little background on the BL2 facility. The BL2 facility is being used now to conduct research on several pests that we have here in Minnesota. But one is the soybean aphid, which last in 2003 caused over $80 million of loss to our soybean growers in Minnesota. So the research that's being conducted in this facility will help determine ways to control this insect without using pesticides. One of those is biological control. So what is currently happening in the BL2 facility now is biological control for soybean aphid. Garlic mustard, as many of you know, is an invasive species here in Minnesota. Buckthorn, another invasive species. Purple loosestrife, an invasive species of wetlands. And the diamondback moth, which is also an invasive insect in Minnesota that has potential to cause devastating economical losses. One thing that we're very excited about with this facility and also for the BL3 facility is that this BL2 facility has been commissioned now for a year, and we've received over $2.7 million of funding, grant funding for research in this facility that then directly that research directly affects Minnesota. We have over $5 million funding.
Hold on a moment. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I didn't get your name, but the purple loosestrife, is that research being done in the BL2 project?
Chairman Dorman, Representative, yes, it is being conducted. The biological control of that particular weed is being conducted in the current BL2 facility.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Yes,
Durgan.
That research is also being done at the North Central Outreach Center in Grand Rapids.
Ms. Durgan.
In fact, there's quite a bit of progress is made on that for controlling purple loosestrife, I think, with the beetles. Is that correct?
Chairman Dorman, Representative. Yes, and the initial research for those beetles actually were introduced into the U.S. as a biological control. The initial research conducted on those beetles was conducted in a BL2 facility. So they weren't conducted in this one. We didn't have that facility yet. They were conducted in one in Maryland. But we are looking at additional insects to bring in for biological control of purple loosestrife, and that research is being conducted in a BL2 facility, our BL2 facility.
My concern is, or question is, or I don't know if it's a concern, but how do you have to have this kind of control facility when they were obviously doing the research already at a facility in Grand Rapids?
Ms. Durgan.
Chairman Dorman, Representative. Purple loosestrife is an introduced weed species, and the pest for biological control of that particular species, we need to go back to its origin to find those original pests. Those pests do not occur here in Minnesota, and so as the research is conducted on them, they have to be brought into a secure facility to make sure that they only then will eat purple loosestrife and not some of our other crops. So the beetles now that have been released have gone through that quarantine facility. They have gone through all the research and now are being used for biological control. We could not go back to Asia or China and bring in insects without first going through the quarantine process for the research. So that success of what we're seeing with biological control actually happened in a BL2 facility, and now that they're out, they're spread and they're working very well. And that's what we're hoping will continue with the BL2 and also now the BL3 facility. I don't know if I explained that very well, but
I understand you're introducing the insects from another country, the beetles, to a facility in Maryland, but obviously the research of whether or not it would be controlling the purple loosestrife was done at a facility. It was a BL2 that may have had some controls on it, but it was done at the Grand Rapids Outreach Center at the University of Minnesota.
Ms. Durgan, the facility at Grand Rapids, is it a BL2?
Facilities at Grand Rapids, Chairman Dorman, Representative, you're correct. And the research that is being conducted now at Grand Rapids is part of the research team, and that is the next step. So the BL2 facility is the first step in the research. The next step is to take it out in the field, and that research now is being conducted in the field, and the North Central Research and Outreach Center at Grand Rapids is one of those field sites. So they cannot happen by themselves. So the field testing has to also occur with the initial research and the screening of the insects.
Okay, thank you.
Please continue.
One of the reasons that we're interested in this BL3 facility now is that there is a shortage of BL3 facilities throughout the U.S. There are three facilities now in the U.S., one in Maryland, one in Hawaii, and one at University of Davis in California that's not commissioned. There's no facility in the Midwest. There's no facility that is really looking at Midwest agriculture or the ecosystems in the Midwest. So it is important that we have a facility that really will look at the ecosystems and agriculture in Midwest and also Minnesota. One of the reasons the interest in the BL3 facility now is critical is because of soybean rust. Soybean rust is a disease that has just recently entered the U.S. It has the potential to cause 10 to 40% yield loss. You'll hear a representative from the Minnesota soybean growers that will talk a little bit more about this potential for the devastation that this disease has in the soybean growers of the state. And we cannot conduct research on this particular disease without a BL3 facility. Since this disease does not occur yet in Minnesota, we do not want to bring this disease into the state without a secure facility so that it does not become established here. Not only is soybean rust critical, but there are other diseases that could cause severe losses and why the BL3 facility is important. Many of you may remember Fusarium head blight with wheat and barley that has caused over $2 billion in losses in Minnesota. There are several other diseases that can also be potential problems in wheat and barley in Minnesota, and a BL3 facility is necessary to conduct the research on those pests before they come into the state and before they come into the U.S. And then finally, one other disease that we're very concerned about is a disease called sudden oak death. This disease now is in California. It's causing devastating losses to oak species in that state, and we're very worried that we may see that particular disease here in Minnesota. And to enable to conduct the research on this particular disease before it gets here to Minnesota, a BL3 facility is needed to conduct that research so that we can look at the life cycle of that disease and be able to have control measures before it gets to the state. So finally, the addition of a BL3 facility with our BL2 facility would allow research on both current diseases and potential diseases for agricultural systems, but also ecosystems in the state, things like garlic mustard, purple loosestrife, and other pests. And finally, this BL3 facility with the BL2 facility, the University of Minnesota will be the only public institution in the U.S. that will have both a BL2 and a BL3 for plant research. And this will put us in a very competitive situation for federal grants that will come to Minnesota then and will directly benefit University of Minnesota and also agriculture and ecosystems here in Minnesota.
Thank you. We have a question or comment from Representative Knobloch, but before we go to that question or comment, we have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting to the order, and I believe Representative Knobloch and I carefully reviewed the minutes of the last meeting about an hour and a half ago in my office, and he found them to be correct. Would you like to make a motion, Representative Knobloch?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of approving the minutes from the last meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. Representative Knobloch, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dean Durgan. I was involved in the original quarantine facility, the BL2 facility, when we authorized it a few years ago. I've got several questions. I guess, is a BL3 facility more secure, or I guess, what's the fundamental difference between a BL2 facility and a BL3 facility?
Dean?
Representative Knobloch. A BL3 facility is more secure. Okay, so the BL2 facility is licensed for insects. The BL3 facility will be licensed for pathogens. Pathogens are much smaller than insects, so there is more security. There's also more security of how people can move in and out of those facilities. Carol, I don't know if you have other comments on the difference between a BL2 and a BL3. Chairman?
Doctor?
The BL3 is a much higher containment. It includes shower in and shower out facilities at this particular proposed site. So and what we're really targeting here are things that are very microscopic. We're looking at spores. And so the facility has to have the type of ventilation and be self-contained in terms of heating and cooling. The BL2 facilities are highly contained, yet are not quite sophisticated enough to handle these sorts of exotic pathogens that are spore producers.
And so, Mr. Chair, Dean Durgan or, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name?
Professor Ishimaru.
Okay, or Professor. So is it, how many square feet would the BL3 facility be? How much would that add to the existing facility?
Professor or Ms. Durgan?
Chairman Dorman, Representative Nodlock, it will double the size. So it will be approximately the same size as the BL2 facility. The BL3 facility will increase the size again.
Okay. And is it a case where, I mean, in terms of the, Mr. Chair, the security aspects, could you just add, I mean, have you outgrown the BL2 facility in the sense of the capacity you have to do projects there, or is just the entire BL2 facility because of federal regulations unsuitable for this sort of research? I mean, can you not just put in a shower containment area and some additions and use the current labs you have?
Doctor?
Mr. Chairman? The existing BL2 facility was built specifically for research with insects. It does not have the facilities for growing plants. And the BL3 facility is one that we'll have a new agenda, basically, because we'll be working with systems where we're including plants and soil and plant pathogens. And the BL2 that exists at U of M is not suitable at this time for working with plant pathogens. And it is, as I understand it, it is being used, fully occupied as well.
And Mr. Chair, Professor Dean, I think we also spent around $17 million over the last few years replacing greenhouses at the university with some much more modern greenhouses. Those are obviously for growing plants. I take it those are not suitable for this sort of research?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. And finally, I guess, Mr. Chair, Professor Dean, if I remember right, the original facility we built a few years ago cost about $3 million. Now, this one apparently will cost about $5 million for the same square footage. Is there something about this one that is significantly more expensive per square foot in terms of building than the one we built a few years ago?
Ms. Durgan?
Chairman Ripson and Knobloch, the BL2 facility was a little bit more than $3 million. The original allocation was $5.9 million for phase one of our greenhouse facility, and the BL2 facility was around over $4 million by the time that we did get that building commissioned. And the BL3 facility will cost approximately the same, more, one, because of construction costs, but also because of the higher containment that needs to happen, and also because of the specialized equipment for storing the pathogens within that facility. So they are somewhat comparable. We could get you more information for that. In fact, Orlin Miller is here with our planning department that can also answer those questions. If you have one that you'd like to direct to him, I can ask him to come forward.
Would you like him to come forward now, or should we let him finish with the presentation if you have additional questions at that time? Either way.
I think they were done with their presentation, Mr. Chair, but I'll end there for now. I guess I don't want my comments to be interpreted as opposition to it. I guess I wasn't familiar with this proposal. I think the BL2 facility has done an excellent job. I just wanted to learn some more about this one.
Yeah, and Representative Knobloch, I appreciate your questions, and that's why I thought it was important to have this overview, because it is a late entry into the field, if you will. I just think it's important enough that we should look at it. So these should not be looked at as being against it. And I know sometimes the case here, not from y'all, but occasionally people ask questions and think you're against it. Occasionally, you just want information. We're kind of funny. So I do appreciate that. Representative Mahoney is next on the list, and then we'll go to you, Representative. We'll pass to Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dean Durgan. Now, the BL2 is when it's the insect separation or isolation, you've got a couple rooms where you really work with the insects in isolation, if I remember right. You've got a negative air pressure coming into that room, so you're drawing air into it so no insects can... It's enough of a vacuum so that the insects can't fly out. That is pretty much correct. You've got a variety of isolation booths within the isolation booths. You've got a double door entry system into the particular room itself, if I remember right.
Correct.
You've got negative air pressure coming into all the quote-unquote labs. And I believe there's a double door going out into the greenhouses with a negative pressure there also.
Correct.
What difference will you be making in the BL3, or will you just be enhancing those particular kinds of amenities to it, or safeguards? And will you be putting up another greenhouse with even a more secure entry and exit system and air exchange?
Ms. Durgan.
The BL3 facility will have all of the security and the safeguards that the BL2 has. In addition, it will be shower in and shower out. So anybody that goes in that facility will have to take shower, change clothes, go into the facility. When they come out, take shower, change clothes, come out of the facility through locked doors again. The reason is because we are dealing with very small spores, you know, microspores to come out of that facility. And we will be sharing the head houses and some of the facilities for the BL2, but the BL3 will have those additional security measures. The same as the BL2, anything that goes into that facility won't come out of that facility unless it's autoclaved and people are showered, is the additional security.
Representative Mahoney.
One other question. I actually worked on the BL2, and I'm just wondering, do you think you might be able to have your prints all done before you break ground for it, or are you going to do another design and build with this one?
I would like to have Orlin Miller come forward to talk a little bit about that. Orlin, if you wouldn't mind.
Orlin Miller, come on down. You are the next contestant at the Capital Investment Committee's Tuesday overview of this. Mr. Miller, please state your name for the committee.
Orlin Miller from Capital Planning at the University of Minnesota.
Swell to have you here. Representative Mahoney's wondering about how you're going to, if this is successful, go about constructing it.
We will probably involve a construction manager at the early stage so that we control costs and know exactly what our construction costs are from during the design phase. But it will be a bid project in terms of all subcontracts will be bid, as opposed to design bid, build. Sorry.
Representative Mahoney.
I just know that there were some problems with the BL2, and just on a personal note, I would prefer to have much more thorough plans before you break ground on this one.
Yes.
Having some intimate knowledge, and I hate to have to share that with my committee members.
Representative Mahoney, one of the problems has been, and I'm not being defensive on this, but one of the problems was the regulations were changing as we were in design, and that was very difficult. It drove some cost issues, and it certainly drove some decision-making in terms of things being a little bit far ahead when we were broke construction before we knew the detail. But we will, we certainly take your information seriously.
A small additional comment, please.
One additional. Are you basing this off of apparently the other two or three BL3s in the nation, or are you designing a whole brand new one and reinventing the wheel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, we're trying to minimize the reinvention of the wheel as much as possible. At this point, we've done no design. Frankly, we've not even completed full pre-design on it. But we have done consultation with people who've done these and benchmarked their costs and their needs, or what they found to be the needs. We have consulted with greenhouse experts, and we have a very expert architect who's been involved in these kind of things. So we've developed a preliminary program and costs on those bases without trying to start from scratch. Certainly, the B2 that we did informed this process, and I might add that B3 for for human pathogens has also informed this process, which is being investigated and designed on the East Bank campus. So all of those processes help us determine what this is, what this needs programmatically, as well as what the cost may be.
Great. Mr. Olson, while we have you here, and we'll put you on the list, Representative, while we have you here, could you maybe address, if you do know, some of the space issues that Representative Knobloch, should it be twice as big, you got any economy somewhere we could work on?
Mr. Chair, certainly
Olson,
I can.
Miller Olson.
Because at the first time, when the BL2, we had many conversations with Representative Knobloch about this and the cost. It is roughly the same size. I can't give you a precise match, but we're talking about something in the neighborhood of 7,000 square feet here, including the greenhouses and labs. One of the issues has been that when we first anticipated this, I should add that we anticipated building needing one, a BL3 at some point in time, and the original design accommodated for that. We were not aware that there could be no sharing of the laboratory space, for instance. It's now grown because we have to do that. You ask why things were more expensive, and primarily it's because everything is just a notch higher. I would say that the notch higher in terms of security, sealing the building, what we call hardening the building. It even needs to be very well protected against some outside force damaging the building. It has to be more fail-safe than even the BL, the mechanical systems and so on need to be more fail-safe than even the BL2. All of those things add cost. And frankly, the building will be sealed much like the cockpit of the fuselage would be. It's sealed tightly. It's more than showering in and showering out. Everything has to be sanitized in and out. But him in the shower, but everything that goes in is destroyed or sanitized before it comes out. The systems are just another level of sophistication from what we were dealing with in the BL2.
Great. Thank you. Another question for Mr. Miller, specifically, before we let him go? Are you with Mr. Miller or Ms. Durgan? Miller Durgan?
Probably the general.
All right. President Kahn.
And Miller and then to the
general. All right. All right. We'll let you have a Miller.
So I'm curious, Mr. Miller, on the request level for this. Here it is. It says that this would cover the cost for the BL additional research equipment for BL2 and the proposed BL3 facility, but then the costs weren't attributed to each facility in the little table we have.
Mm-hmm.
So is $4.9 million the total ask? And then I'm curious if you could attribute those things for us to the, in terms of each facility.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson Kelleher, that 4.9 is the total. I may have to ask Bev Durgan as to what the breakdown is, but I believe the component of the additional growth chamber in the existing facility was in the neighborhood of $100,000.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair, just a question about, so we make sure that this is bondable in terms of the equipment. I know we can say equipped and furnished, but I guess I'm very curious about the life cycle, expected life cycle of the equipment for this particular facility, whether it is going to meet our usual sort of 20-year benchmark.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson Kelleher, it will be equipment that is not just sitting on the desk on a bench somewhere. It's built-in large-scale equipment that's hardwired and all. So it's the kind that meets that test of being actually part of the building more than something that can be moved in and out at will. With scientific equipment, it's always difficult to say whether or not it will still be useful, functional, I should say, in 20 years, but it'll certainly last 20 years.
Okay. And then for the dean, I wanted to ask, because I think it's probably more appropriately addressed to her, where this falls on the university's request list in terms of priority.
Chairman Dorgan, Representative. The BL3 facility was a priority for the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences. It was not part of the bonding request that we had last year, and one of the reasons for that is that we did want to work out all the issues with the BL2 facility and make sure that that facility was up and running before we went for the BL3 facility. The BL3 facility will be or would be a priority for our next bonding ask at the University of Minnesota and for the college.
Right. And Representative Keller, we will check with the Department of Finance and get you and us a better answer to make sure that it is bondable. I believe that it is, but we'll check with finance because I think that's a very, very good point. On the list next is Representative Opass, who's been very patient.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have missed this earlier. Is the BL3 the highest level possible, or is there a BL4?
Doctor? Ms. Durgan?
Chairman.
Anybody?
Chairman, Representative, there, in theory, there could be a BL4, but there's, I actually had a discussion this morning with Dan Adair, who is a representative from Kaivaran, which is a company that's very interested in developing these highly contained facilities. And to our knowledge, there is no such BL4 facility for plants anywhere in the United States. And it's not something that's probably going to be attainable or required. It's pretty much beyond what is really needed for working with plant pathogens at this point. And so BL3 is about, it is the most secure facility you can build at this point for plant pathogens.
Thank you very much. Is that on point, Representative Holbrook? We have a long list of
just the one.
Okay.
Well, as if you got other people, just put me on the list.
All right, I'll be happy to put you on the list.
Yeah, that's fine.
Happy to do that. Next on the list is Representative Braun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe Ms. Durgan, you can answer my question. When I look at your justification for the facility, I see a couple comments. One being there's a severe shortage of BL3 containment facilities in the United States. And then further down on the list, it talks about recognizing the possibility of terrorist attacks on our food supply, which is extremely important, not only to us in Minnesota, but throughout the United States. My question is there federal dollars or federal grant dollars available through Homeland Security or through the USDA that we should be or are tapping into that I may not know about?
Ms. Durgan?
Representative.
Dean Durgan?
Yes, there, you know, through Homeland Security that we were hoping that there would be funding for these type of facilities. Right now, a lot of the money is going for other sort of structures besides infrastructure buildings, and federal government is somewhat getting out of buildings, but, you know, that could be a possibility. As of right now, that funding is not directed towards, you know, infrastructure type building facilities. But has been recognized within Homeland Security and, you know, various organizations that having BL3 facilities to conduct this research is important and that they're needed.
Representative Brock, okay. And I should point out that I'm working on Majority Leader Paulson. I think that it would be very beneficial to take the entire committee to go look at the facility in Hawaii sometime in March. And so I'll get back to you on that. But your next question.
We could help with the arrangements, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Durgan, maybe I'm looking buildings versus equipment. It sounds like maybe there's a way to separate that out. Is there grants for equipment that we could tap into versus the infrastructure of the building itself in terms of partnering with the federal government to create a facility that advantages all of us?
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that there is that possibility, and I think we need to look at the type of equipment. Some of this equipment is built-in type equipment, large growth chambers, and they need to be in the building as the building is built because it's difficult to move them. And then there's other type of equipment that can be moved into the building after it's built. So I think that there is some flexibility. One of the issues that we do have, remember, is that once a piece of equipment is in there, it's in there for the life of the equipment. You can't be moving equipment from one lab into that facility and then moving it out for another purpose. So once it's there, and then we'll have to take it out.
Thank you. Next on the list, Representative Khan.
Chairman and Dean Durgan, actually, Laura asked the major question I was going to ask, but so I'd just like to piggyback on that, and that's the issue of it absolutely seems to me that this ought to be a federal program. And what I would be very cautious is our moving ahead of a federal program. I'll go back to the history of when we did this once with the Supercomputer Institute in the state, and that we decided that this was Governor Perpich, one of ours, not one of yours, who decided that we had to move ahead to be on the front edge of this curve, and so that we went ahead and funded not just one, but I think two supercomputers, you know, all on our own with total independent state funding. Not only did, as soon as the federal program started, and this was not hindsight, because several of us said this was going to happen at the time, federal government did start their program, and the first thing that happened was that Minnesota came off the table because our plate was too full, and they were interested in putting these supercomputers in places where they didn't have it. Besides that, we actually, so, you know, okay, well, we paid for it on our own and that. But besides that, worse than that, was that then when they set up their supercomputer network, we were left out of that because we weren't part of the federal supercomputer, because we hadn't been federally funded. So we suffered from it in two ways. One, we spent our own money. We not only didn't get credit for spending our own money to put us to the top of the list, we went to the bottom of the list, and then beyond that, we were then cut totally out of the federal network because we hadn't been funded with federal funding. And it just seems to me, I just see so many parallels in this, that I would be very cautious about moving ahead unless we absolutely knew that there was not going to be federal funding into doing what looks to me to be a federal need.
I would say that we can probably count on some good federal representation depending on how the elections come out. And to give you your shot there, Navi. No, I think you raise a good point. So you have to find the balance, Representative Khan, between, you know, is the Sergeant of Arms in the room? Is that the second time you've done?
I think so.
I know Dean's went off earlier. I'm a little hard of hearing, but not that bad. On the other hand, we also have to weigh what's at stake. I think the investment in supercomputers, I don't know what the total cost was relative to what was at stake, but if we think of what's at stake in our soybean production, I mean, I think we have to find, I think your comments are very prudent, but I think we have to find that balance and should certainly consider that. I think that's a good point.
Mr. Chairman, I think the point I'm making is that we shouldn't just listen to the people at the state level who obviously want this high-class facility. We really need to talk to people at the federal level and find out what programs are moving through at the federal level and what's happening with Homeland Security, what's happening on the Homeland Security issue, and, you know, are these the kinds of things that are being looked at as soon as the federal government decides that it needs to look at agricultural program and our food supply and that kind of thing.
And to be fair, I think we're suggesting we push them faster than they want to go because of I think that the danger that's out there. But do you know, Ms. Durgan, any clue about what may or may not be happening on the federal level in this area? And if you don't, that's okay. I mean,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I do know that with our conversations with federal and with Homeland Security is that there's no plans right now to be building more buildings, and that's not where the priority is, but it's not going to mean that's going to change. I do know with surveying the experiment station directors throughout the Midwest that none of them have plans of building a BL3 facility in the near future at another land grant within the Midwest with state funding. That may change, but that's our picture right now.
Great. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Bergen, a couple of questions. We've got in our packet some letters of support from different organizations, and one of them is concerning the small grain cereal concern. Has university or your department approached corporations or organizations that have a vested interest in this type of research, such as General Mills or Pillsbury or others that are in the small grain business for some kind of funding of this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, we have not this time.
Representative Silver, is there a reason why we haven't? I mean, the Carlson School went to the top of the list because of a grant from the Carlson Corporation at the time for business school, and I think there'd be a lot of agricultural interests in the state of Minnesota, corporations that have a very vested interest in this type of research, wood products industries. Is there a reason that we haven't tried to find some outside matching of this?
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have not seeked outside funding as of now. So it doesn't mean that we cannot do it, but we have not done it.
And then the other question I had, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Durgan,
Silver.
Usually when two things, there's usually a type of process that I don't always agree with, but you said submit it to the central administration and they do some ranking of this project. Is this one follow that particular process?
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that this facility will be a priority for the St. Paul campus in our next bonding.
So in the next bonding, not in this one, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then the last one, there's a higher education, there's a one-third match from some source, mostly tuition, but is there a one-third requirement on this project?
Representative, yes, the university, is my understanding, will be required to do the one-third match.
So, Mr. Chairman, then that is not the 4.9 that is requested here, but the one-third less than that, is that correct? Or is the building one-third more than 4.9?
Representative Solberg, I actually think the way this would work, the way it's written, it would be a grant to the Department of Agriculture, and I don't think that, and I could be wrong, I'll get back to you if I'm wrong, if I speak incorrectly, signal me, but John, since the money is actually going to the Department of Ag to build the facility, I don't believe that their one-third requirement by the University of Minnesota is there. I don't know how you built the level two, if that was a joint facility with the Department of Ag as well. Ms. Durgan?
Chair, the BL2 facility was through bonding, and it's a University of Minnesota facility.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a little confusing to me. Then if we're giving it to the Department of Ag to build it, to the university, and we can do that, but this facility has gone through the university steps and been rated by the University of Minnesota. I'm a little concerned that we're kind of bypassing everything. We kind of are doing the same thing with the Rochester facility, and I can understand that, but that's a joint process between deed and mail, but the university is involved in that one as well, and instead of going to the university, we went to DTED or whatever it is called now. So I'm a little concerned about that particular type of process we're using.
Ms. Durgan, do you have any comments on it? Otherwise, what I would say, chatting with staff, we'll look at how the BL2 facility was done, and we'll take a look at this. But Mr. Miller, can you bring light where there's no darkness? That would be good. Mr. Miller, welcome back.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'll try. The initial, for the BL2 and other green, particularly the BL2 portion of the other larger project, was certainly supported and brought forward by both the Department of Agriculture and the university as a shared use facility. And in fact, it's proceeding and being used that way. However, as I recall, and I haven't looked at the bonding bill recently, but as I recall, the money did in fact, in the final analysis, come to the university, and the university built the facility, and MDA has a role in its operation and use.
Right.
So that was the decision made at that time, even though it was originally brought forward by MDA.
And currently the way this is structured is the $4.9 million would go to the Department of Ag, who would then build the facility. Maybe we need to work that through a little bit, but that would not have
the one-third requirement, then we'd be sending the total cost of this project. Is it 4.9? Is that fairly accurate?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay.
It's not the request, but rather the total value.
Mr. Chair, under the BL2, was that a one-third match under that funding? Because occasionally there's good reason to not require that.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes in research facilities, there's no college kids to pay tuition to be able to fund the one-third, or sometimes there's no other funds available, particularly for, I think, smaller projects. Did the BL2 require the one-third match?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I need to confirm that absolutely, but I believe that in the final analysis it did. When the money came to the university, I believe we accepted one-third debt service, but I would need to confirm that to be sure that
And Mr. Chair, as this went through the university system, it was anticipated to be a one-third also from university funds of some kind or other forms. It doesn't have to be tuition, it could be companies.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we would either look toward funding the one-third with internal sources or fundraising or some combination.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Solberg. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for Dean Jergen. In your earlier presentation, I thought I heard you say that the BL2 is totally booked and fully utilized and at its capacity. Is that correct?
Dean Durgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's my understanding that the BL2 facility is being fully utilized. Is it at 100% capacity? That I don't know for sure, but I know that when I was in it last, that there was lots of research going on and that it was being utilized. I can check on that for you if you want.
Well, you please do, but now taking to the BL3, could you help the committee here understand why you believe that you'll have the same type of utilization of a BL3 facility, and then I will also caution you, I'm going to kind of give my comment and let you answer, is be careful when you put Homeland Security to everything, because I don't really know that this particularly pertains a lot to Homeland Security. This is a business attitude. This is farming. Yes. How many billion-dollar industry in the state of Minnesota? And I think what you're trying to do is prevent the invasion of plant pathogens that destroy our harvests in our fields, and whether it's corn or soybeans or wheat or the oaks up in hardwood forests, or if you can do anything to get rid of the buckthorn in particular areas, you got my vote. But please tell the committee why you believe that the BL3 will be utilized at the level of the BL2, because my understanding is the BL2 is fairly well utilized.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, as I mentioned, there are currently only two functioning BL3 facilities in the U.S., one in Maryland and one in Hawaii. Those facilities are fully utilized, and the waiting period to bring additional research into those facilities is quite long. The priority for those facilities are not for Midwestern agriculture or Midwestern ecosystems. The one in Hawaii is primarily tropical, and the one in Maryland also is not being utilized for some of the major crops. So we really feel that since there is not a BL3 facility in the Midwest at all, and one that is working on issues that we have here in Minnesota in the upper Midwest, that it will be fully commissioned, and that we will have no problem, that we will be very successful in receiving grants, federal grants and other grants to conduct research in those facilities.
Members, I wonder if we should let them finish with the presentation, because we seem to have went a little bit off where they were in the presentation. If we finish the presentation
that would be all right. I'll still keep the list, but I think we've went, and some of these might come up when either Mr. Jacobson or some Department of Ag comes up, so it might behoove us to at least the people that were on the list to testify, let them come up and then go back to questions. So unless I hear a strong objection, that would be my intent. Ms. Jurgen, did you have anything else to add before we get somebody else?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chair, I'm strongly objecting.
Okay, strongly object.
But I just wanted to quickly touch base on Representative Mahoney's comment about, you know, being careful with the Homeland Security piece of it. I do see them intertwined. You know, whether it's naturally occurring or whether somebody releases something into our food supply, I do see how the Homeland Security part of it, plus the business aspect and the agricultural aspect of our economy in the state is extremely important. But I do see the impact and the importance of the Homeland Security piece to this puzzle, and I guess I just wanted to add that in the mix.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next on the list from the Minnesota Soybean Growers, Mr. Ron Jacobson. Ron, do you want to come down? Maybe you want to bring anybody with you, or are you all by yourself? You don't need any help. Where are you from, Ron?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name's Ron Jacobson. I farm down by Wells, Minnesota.
Okay.
But I'm still in Freeborn County.
My neck of the woods.
I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of the Level 3 containment at the University of Minnesota. The legislature should be commended for its support for the existing...
We've been condemned quite a bit, too.
You caught that, didn't you?
So I appreciate a red you're turning around.
The Level 2 state-of-the-art facility, which is designed to study exotic insects. The Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council provided funding for that design facility. It's been invaluable for the study of soybean aphids. But the state and the nation, farmers, are facing a new threat, soybean rust. Rust is fast-spreading fungal disease that devastates soybeans crops worldwide, mostly currently in Brazil and Argentina. Level 3 facility is designed specifically to study exotic plant pathogens such as soybean rust. The USDA, Minnesota Department of Ag, University of Minnesota, and soybean organizations are working together to best prepare Minnesota soybean farmers for rust. Left untreated, rust can quickly defoliate soybean plants and dramatically reduce soybean yields. It is estimated that losses in Minnesota could range from 10 to 40%. That would mean an economic loss of $120 million to $483 million for soybean farmers in Minnesota in one growing season. Soybean rust can be controlled with fungicides, but there's a very small window of application. Once soybean rust establishes itself in the U.S., it will likely remain an ongoing problem until rust-resistant varieties can be developed. That is where the Level 3 facility would provide immeasurable benefits to soybean farmers worldwide. The facility that is at a biosafety Level 3 is necessary for research on rust. This research on rust will control factors as well as rust-resistant soybean varieties. As you've already heard, there is a very severe shortage of Level 3 containments in the U.S. Soybean rust is on our doorstep, and other exotic pathogens could threaten the national security and need for a Level 3 facility has never been more important. The Minnesota Soybean Growers is asking you strongly and swift support for the Level 3 containment facility at the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mr. Jacobson. Do any members have questions for Mr. Jacobson? I just got to tell a story while Schoenfeld's in the room. Mr. Jacobson and Jerry Schoenfeld, former Representative Schoenfeld, cornered me to talk about this, and former Representative Schoenfeld started talking about Level 3 containment facilities. And I kind of looked over and I said, Schoenfeld, I thought you represented the soybean guys. What have they got with these sexual predators? But apparently they're not connected. I thought they were going to make them eat rusty soybeans, but that's not the case, I believe. It's something totally different. So I apologize for my misunderstanding and for
for bringing that up, former Representative Schoenfeld. So, Ron, we appreciate you. Mr. Jacobson, we appreciate you testifying before the committee and all the hard work you do as President of the Soybean Growers Association. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Next on the list is Mary Hanks with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Mary Hanks. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I manage the Sustainable Agriculture and Integrated Pest Management Programs and supervise the quarantine officer at the BL2 facility as part of the Integrated Pest Management Program. The Department of Ag is here as part of an ongoing partnership with the University of Minnesota on pest management. We have about a 20-year history of working in partnership with the University of Minnesota on biological control research, plant pest surveys, and integrated pest management research and other projects. In 2000, the University of Minnesota and the Department of Ag came before the legislature and requested money for the BL2 facility. We came together to do that. That was funded and is, as you've heard, is already fully occupied with projects on insects that provide biological control or potential biological control for weeds that are problems in the state, such as buckthorn, as Representative Mahoney requested, that the about $100,000 in this bonding proposal before you would be for growth chambers that would be specifically for buckthorn biological control research. In the facility right now, we have many, many projects going on soybean aphid, and the funding provided for those comes from federal agencies, from the soybean growers, as represented here by Ron Jacobson, the garlic mustard agent that is in the facility is funded by the U.S. Forest Service, the buckthorn and purple loosestrife control agents that are in the facility, the funding is coming from DNR and from LCMR. And then the National Science Foundation is providing funds for the diamondback moth work. So in the facility that is currently in operation, there's a very diverse set of funders and a very diverse set of constituents that are interested in the work that's going on there. As Dean Durgan said, there's about $2.7 million already committed for research at the University of Minnesota because we have the BL2 facility. There's another $5 million in grant applications out there for research that would take place in the BL2. As Dean Durgan and Dr. Ishimura said, we fully expect to have that kind of research commitment in the BL3. I guess I'm not going to take up a whole lot of your time, but the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, some of the confusion I think with Representative Solberg, the department did come forward last session with a request for pre-design money for this facility and for the growth chamber. And then this year, in conversation with Representative Erdahl and the chair, felt that we needed to pursue coming forward for the construction as well as the pre-design, probably through the University of Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Going back to the list, Representative Murphy at one point had a question. Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, I still do have a
great
question.
We can bring Ms. Durgan back if you'd like. Ron Jacobson, if you want to talk about wells. The city, not the...
No,
water.
But I wondered if he knew Henry.
Mm-hmm. He would know Henry Gallus mm-hmm. very well.
That's good. I'm going to tell Henry. But I got confused when Ms. Durgan was talking about priorities and where it is on the list at the university. And I heard one thing, and then it was Representative Solberg asked another question. Kelleher was asking. Now, this is going to be on the priority list for next year, next time, the next bonding cycle?
I think, and I'll answer that in part, and then we'll let Ms. Durgan speak. If this wouldn't be successful, had we just said, we got time, let's plan for it, this would be on their list for next time.
But then, will it be on the university's priority list, or just the department, or just the School of Agriculture's list, or will it be on the St. Paul campus list? I heard all of those things as that it would be the priority of all of them, and I want to know where it will be.
The request for planning money came from the Department of Ag. If we go that route and say, let's plan for it, give the Department of the Ag planning money, what would you anticipate happening if we go down that road?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this particular facility has been a priority for the college and the university, and it was not on this year's bonding, again, because we wanted to finish the BL2 facility and make sure that was up and running. The reason now that this facility is more critical and the need has arisen is because soybean rust showed up in the United States this year. So it was identified 2 months ago, 3 months ago. We knew soybean rust was going to be becoming an issue in the U.S. We did not think it was going to arrive as soon as it did. So this facility, it's been a priority to build it. The urgency has increased because of the issue of soybean rust now in the United States.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, and Ms. Durgan, that it's the priority of the College of Agriculture at the University of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is not on the bonding, it was not on the bonding list that is before you now. As we prepare for our next bonding bill, it will be also on the university's priority for bonding.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy, assuming the Senate prevails, it would be on their bonding request for next year. Representative Murphy.
And then, Ms. Durgan, do you have any idea of how it would weigh in on the list of university priorities?
Ms. Durgan, are you in a position to answer that question?
No, I'm not, but it ranks very high on the College of Ag's list, and it will, we will work for it to be on the list. But the next list has not been fully developed yet. Of the university's ranking bonding list.
Representative Murphy, follow up?
Not today, Mr. Chair, but I think maybe tomorrow I'll have a little language supplement to your presentation.
There you go. I always like language. It's where would we be without language, really?
Representative McNamara.
Writers, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dean Durgan, can you either get for us, or if you don't know it, was the BL2 facility paid for one-third by the university?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will get that information for you. As Orlin Miller discussed, that I think that it was, but as part of that, but I will check for sure and get that information to the Chair.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, my next follow-up would be, and maybe again you'd... thank you. Maybe you don't know the answer to this one, but I guess I would like to know, or possibly someone else on the committee might know. Have we ever built facilities at the University of Minnesota in joint with one of the departments or something, and you did not have to do the one-third?
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative... We have built some buildings on campus, federal dollars buildings. I'm just familiar with the St. Paul campus and the history that I've been there that we have not done that. But I could check to see if I could find that out also.
And then one real more quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Then if you could answer what the proposal would be for the BL3, if the university would be funding a third of that or not. Also, same question.
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding that is if this is funded through the regular bonding process, is that the university, unless there's some other rider onto the bill, that the university bill will be responsible for one-third of the debt service. That's been my understanding.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question on your information you gave us, and I think also in the comments you referenced several times that the funding for operating this thing or for the doing the research has been done with grants, and most of those are federal grants or company funds. I'm just curious, what aggregate amount of grants does it take to run a facility like this for a year with the research? Like, what kind of grants are coming to the BL2 facility? What do you expect to come in terms of grants to fund the research in the BL3 facility annually, maybe?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative, these facilities, as you know, are expensive to run because of all the equipment in them. We estimate that the annual operating of this building will be $150,000 to run this building, and that, you know, I've not done the math, and I'll need to, but you know, at least several million dollars of grants per year within these facilities to help offset the operating and the research that's being conducted in these facilities.
Next on the list is Representative Kelleher. Representative Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman, I think that Representative Eastland just asked the question I had about leveraging dollars. So I wanted to know the total amount of dollars leveraged for research in the facility so far and what the expected amount is in the EL3.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Regan, how much is the pre-designed design phase of the building? How much money would we need to have the design pre-designed?
Is that something you can answer, or you want to bring?
I would like to bring Orlin Miller back to the table. Thank you,
Mr. Miller. Would you come down one more time? Well, at least one more time.
Mr. Chair, the question was the cost of just pre-design?
Well, usually we go through a pre-design, then we go to a design, and we go through a build. Put the first two together, pre-design and design.
Okay. How much? In very rough terms, 10% or less of the total cost. For something of this scale, it would normally be in that range, and scale and complexity, it would normally be in that range.
And Mr. Chair, in the BL2, were some of those funds obtained from outside sources for the pre-design or design? You know, I mean, it was promoted by outside sources as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not recall that there were outside funds. MDA may have shared in some of the pre-design costs, but I do not recall that there were outside funds in that project.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions or comments? Oh, absolutely. Representative Peterson.
Explain to me again the compelling urgency of this, and what happens if it doesn't get approved?
Ms. Durgan, if it doesn't get approved, and we just add a little bit more to that, and you're asking a tough question because you don't know what soybean rust is going to do. If soybean rust makes its way to Minnesota, and we don't have a tool to combat it, what would happen? And what happens if soybean rust doesn't come and you don't build it? What other things will mm-hmm. we be lacking? Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. fair? Mm-hmm. Ms. Durgan.
Chair, Representative. The compelling issue right now is soybean rust and the potential for that disease to and the impact it could have on soybean growers. If this facility is not built this year, it will just delay the research that can be conducted on that disease or other type of diseases, sudden oak wilt, or other plant diseases. So it delays the research. It also, since the other facilities are not available, it will delay some of the research. If that pest is not here in Minnesota, we cannot conduct research on that unless we have a secure facility. So the research will just be delayed, is what the impact will be.
Sure.
Representative Peterson.
And if you don't do it, the research, who will?
Ms. Durgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are, you know, some plans for some of this research to be conducted in the Maryland site, and also some of the research will be conducted in countries where soybean rust is right now, Argentina, South America. One of the issues we do have in the upper Midwest is that we do grow different types of soybeans than they do there, and we also have a different climate. So some of the research can be conducted in countries where these diseases are present, but it does not directly apply to Minnesota's situation. So we would be better served with a facility. Some of the research could be conducted other places. Having a facility like this would greatly impact solving, or at least coming up with solutions for this problem for Minnesota growers and the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I just got called out by some constituents for a little visit, so I have missed the flow of the conversation. But just before I was going to leave, I was going to speak up on behalf of our chair of the committee, who I think in this instance heard the urgency from one particular part of the community about this issue, and that 2 years ago, when the university might have looked at some of this, in fact, soybean rust, as you have indicated, was not the issue. And in this instance, people in the community, I think, have brought a specific problem to the chair of this committee, who felt and heard the urgency and felt the need. Sometimes we rewrite priorities here, and in this case, that's what I sense you did, that though it has not gone through the usual process, there seems a reason why we suddenly take a look at it after all and give it higher priority. So I thank you for having heard the specific problems that they were outlining here and have responded by giving them special hearing.
I appreciate that, Representative House. Ms. Durgan, do you have any additional comments that you want to make, or any members of the committee have any additional comments and or questions before we close this part of the hearing and move on to forensic nursing? All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate everyone coming and helping us understand this important issue.
Thank you very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it very, very much.
Do we have that group coming up to talk about forensic nursing facilities? You have others joining you?
Madam Chair, perhaps if the questions go in a direction I can't answer, I will have others joining me, but for now I will not.
And if you would begin by introducing yourself for the tape.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koistra. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Chemical and Mental Health Services at the Center for Chemical and Mental Health Services at the Department of Human Services. This includes state-operated services, regional treatment center campuses, and treatment for sex offenders as well. Madam Chair, my understanding is that the committee wanted more information about the forensic nursing home request. This request is for $12.6 million to design and construct a 50-bed forensic nursing home. This the request is for a new facility at a yet-to-be-designated site. The reason this request was not part of the Department of Human Services bonding request last year. It is the only, I believe, the only piece of our request that was not included last year in last year's position. The reason that this request is before you this year is because we are seeing an increase in our sex offender population, in our mentally ill and dangerous population, who have been committed to our programs for treatment. This has been a fairly recent occurrence. We're also seeing an increase in the number of patients that we currently serve in our forensic nursing home units. Prior to this most recent data, we were not seeing growth in our forensic nursing home units that are currently at the Aguachin campus in Walker. But in the past year, the growth in that unit's been about five. We anticipate five or six a year going forward. This also mirrors the growth we're seeing in our sex offender program, where in past years we were seeing a growth of about 30 a biennium. This biennium we're seeing a growth of about 100. And we hope that that will taper off as we go forward. In our mentally ill and dangerous units, we are seeing a growth of about 15 to 18 a year, whereas in the past we were seeing a growth of about 6 or 8 a year. So we're seeing growth in all the services, including the nursing home service. Individuals who would be receiving nursing home care in this facility would generally be referred from our sex offender treatment program or our mentally ill and dangerous units, or from corrections units where people are aging out and require nursing home services before their sentencing is complete. So this is a growth pattern that we did not see when we prepared our bonding proposals last time. I believe it is somewhat unconventional about this proposal that we don't have a site finally determined. And the governor's position wants to leave the site determination open. We do have some other alternatives that may be available to us as we go forward that would include the renovation of existing facilities on existing campuses. But the reason we can't look at those existing facilities at this time is because there are reuse plans occurring by local communities for those campuses as we are planning to vacate many of them. And we do not know whether the co-location of this facility with other youth reuse plans will be compatible. So there are other alternatives outside of constructing a new facility, and there may very well be cheaper alternatives, but there are planning processes going in place right now by local communities that we don't have the final answers to. I think many of them are close to that, and we may know in the coming months whether those alternatives are viable, but we don't know today, and we don't have the luxury of being able to construct our proposal around knowing that information. The bottom line is we need to provide more services than what we were planning on providing last year, and we need to be prepared to have the bed capacity to do that. It is our intent to have bed capacity available for the demand, and it's certainly our intent to provide it in a place we can provide the best service and at the cheapest cost.
Other questions of the Assistant Commissioner? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner, so I've got a couple of tiered questions here. So the request from administration is for a new facility. I guess that would be my first question, the cost estimate.
Mr. President?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that's correct. This is for a new facility.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner, then, in light of, we had just gotten some information that about 40 nursing homes, I think, have closed their doors within the last year in the state of Minnesota. Is there a possibility that some of these facilities can be converted at less of a cost and maybe spread some of these out where geographically they may be close to their other family members or something? And potentially, does administration have any idea on the cost savings that might be presented under a proposal like that?
Mr. Questa.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that from an issue of would there be other community-based nursing facilities that are closing available for this purpose, certainly we know, we agree that there are those that are closing. We did not consider that a part of the governor's proposal because it was felt that this needed to be state operated on the state campuses given the nature of the individuals that we were serving there. What the issue we run into is we're serving individuals who are committed as sex offenders. We're serving individuals who are committed as mentally dangerous, which means they've either had a violent history or behavior that would suggest a potential for violence. And it was felt that there are probably not a lot of communities out there that would want to consider this type of service for this type of need in a community-based nursing facility.
That's good. Thank you, Murphy, you had a question?
No, I didn't. No. Ma'am, I was just saying to myself, question. Brainerd.
Are there other questions? Yes, I represent Nava.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Koistra, so I understand this is 50 beds. Is that what the proposal is for?
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, that's correct.
And I refresh my memory then. So these are committed sex offenders who, in many cases, are older and have been locked up for a long time, or perhaps have a medical condition of some kind. That's the main purpose of this, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, it would serve a population that any nursing home would serve. You're correct. They would be either sex offenders who are aging and have medical needs as a result of the aging process. They could be individuals who have extreme chronic medical conditions that require nursing home level of care. Or I would assume it could be individuals that have short-term instances of medical need, like anybody else would use a nursing home for convalescence.
Madam Chair, Mr. Koistra, in building this, do you see this in some ways similar to, say, security level or design of something like Moose Lake? Because as I do the math, if we take 12.6 million divided by 50 beds, you're spending $250,000 a bed, which is a lot.
Mr. Koistra?
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, you raised a good point. You're correct. This is expensive. It is probably, the security level would probably be similar to a medium security prison. The other issue that we have to contend with is that it is a medical facility and it would fall under nursing home regulations in terms of how that facility is constructed, square footage requirements, and so forth. So I don't while I cannot argue that this is a costly endeavor, it's not necessarily comparable to a prison in cost just by the nature of the services it provides and the regulations it falls under.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Koistra, do you have any sense for if we go with an existing facility, if we went with those magic words that Representative Murphy was muttering, Agua Ching, Brainerd, do you have any sense for what it would cost to retrofit one of those?
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, I believe our estimate at Agua Ching would be in excess of $10 million. The other issue that we have to consider when we are renovating existing facilities is how that facility is put together. In other words, the Agua Ching facility is a four-story facility. That would also increase our ongoing operating expenses, so it may, from a business standpoint, may not look very attractive to renovate and then when you consider the operating costs. That we do have some possible locations that have one-story facilities that are available for renovation, but I don't believe those are available in either Agua Ching or Brainerd.
And one last question, Madam Chair, Mr. Koistra. So, I mean, if you go to, say, Agua Ching and you spend $10 million, what are you spending it on? This is an existing facility.
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, I believe that much of the expense would be to bring it into nursing home, up to code to nursing home regulations. Not only is our Agua Ching, while our Agua Ching facility currently provides nursing home care, it doesn't meet current nursing home standards. It's been grandfathered in under those standards, and it certainly isn't secure. And that's the other requirement that we believe is the long-term need of this facility.
Well, Madam Chair, let me just say, I'm sure we're learning more about it. I guess I have not been to the Agua Ching facility. I'm not that familiar with it, but I
certainly could build a good fence around it for a lot less than $10 million.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner. I'm not sure if you addressed this or if I missed it, but where are these people now?
Mr. Questra?
Madam Chair, Representative, the nursing home residents that fit the forensic description are at the Aguaching facility today. We currently have about, I believe, last count, 26 individuals who would fit the forensics definition. We have another, I think approximately 70 who are there who are not considered a forensics population. That group, the non-forensic population, has been moving into community-based sites. I believe we've had 175 there in the past, 2 years ago, and we have about a total of about 80 total patients, including forensic population now.
Follow up, President Broad.
Yes, thank you. And then you spoke about this not being the cheapest alternative, and I assume that also means it's not the most cost-effective alternative. When will the decision actually be made if you have a blanket number in the bill that doesn't identify a location?
Mr. Questra.
Madam Chair, many of the alternatives hinge on reuse planning of the other regional treatment centers. We're planning, as part of our mental health restructuring, to vacate the Fergus Falls campus, the Wilbur campus, the Aguaching campus, in fact, and the Brainerd campuses. And this is a result of people receiving better services in the community than what we've had available in the past. The Fergus Falls community, I believe, is starting to near completion of their reuse plans, as is the Wilmer community. My understanding is the Brainerd community is a little further behind. So we're hoping to know more, probably in 4 or 5 months, about the reuse plans of some of the facilities. And then the issue becomes, does it make sense to co-locate a forensics nursing home given the other uses of those campuses?
Just one more. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then Assistant Commissioner, can you tell me how St. Peter fits into this mix?
Madam Chair, yes. There is a possible alternative at St. Peter to renovate an existing building that is a one-story building. And I believe the cost of that renovation would be $8 to $9 million. The question that we have to resolve at St. Peter is the growth of the other sex offender treatment program and whether we're going to need that facility to address that growth as well. Because as I mentioned before, we're growing in all areas of service with respect to sex offenders and the mentally ill and dangerous population. So that could very well be a viable alternative, and there's certainly advantages of having the nursing facility on the same campus where we serve other sex offenders and have the infrastructure there.
Representative Demmer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is along the same lines as Representative Broad's. How about the Faribault? How does Faribault fit in this? I understand they have a wing with some seniors, and a lot of them are sex offenders or whatever. Does that fit in the equation too, or is that something different?
Madam Chair, I'm not acquainted with any alternatives available at Faribault. I'm not saying that there are not. We have not discussed those.
Follow up, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I visited Faribault here about a week ago, and I know there's an entire building they have for senior citizens, and some of them that I looked at look pretty old, and I don't know if that's...
The buildings are the citizens.
No, I mean the citizens. Well, the buildings too, actually. And just when you start talking about that, I thought that might be a part of this. Now, I don't know if that's technically a nursing home, maybe, but that's the type of individuals I think they were living there. So I was curious about that.
We're having a consultation at the desk.
Madam Chair, Mike Tesner.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Tesner. I'm the Chief Executive for State Operated Services. Madam Chair, Representative, the Faribault facility is operated by the Department of Corrections, so the folks that you saw there are under the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections, not the custody of the Commissioner of Human Services. So there would be no way to take people who don't have a criminal sentence and put them into a Department of Corrections facility.
Demmer, further questions?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, what's the difference if we're putting him in a facility that Mr. Koistra, I believe, said it was like a level 2 prison? Can you help me with the difference? I'm a little confused.
Mr. Tessner.
Madam Chair, Representative, the security itself is similar to a medium security prison, but our ability to hold the person is based upon an action in the civil court that says, based upon the treatment needs of this individual, they are committed to the custody of the Christian Human Services for treatment. Contrast that with the Department of Corrections, where people are committed to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections for punishment. So one is specifically to hold the person and their liberty while they're receiving treatment, and the other is for punishment. So those are two distinct motivations.
Garofalo, question?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Earlier you mentioned that the operating costs for a facility that are multi-story versus single-story are substantially different, or they're higher, I believe the term. Can you explain to me why?
Is that the... Mr. Tessner?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. This is a population that, although they are ill and oftentimes physically limited, they are people with violent, dangerous pasts and sometimes present, which requires staff attentiveness. If you have staff that have to run up and down stairs or take an elevator just for emergency situations or for increased supervision situations, you end up having more staff rather because you've got multiple floors to cover versus running down a hallway. That would be one example. Additionally, the older buildings, specifically the Agua Chin campus, were built, I believe, in the 1920s or the teens. So they don't lend themselves easily to renovation. Four stories, you know, if we were trying to renovate a four-story building for 50 beds, you would have presumably two floors that you wouldn't be using, stuff to heat them, stuff to maintain them. All of those increase the operational costs.
Well, pertaining to not the infrastructure, but actually just the operating costs, is there any prohibition or statutes that has prevented us from putting video cameras on the floor to supervise the wings?
Mr. Tessner.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's likely we would have video cameras for monitoring this population based upon the security needs. That doesn't replace the need to have staff immediately available to intercede. These individuals are in fact, by nature of being in a nursing home, vulnerable adults, so we have to provide a level of support and supervision to ensure they're not hurting themselves or others as well. So the video cameras will be helpful in terms of monitoring for security purposes, but it doesn't relieve us the responsibility of interceding with staff directly.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And Representative Broad.
Thank you. I'll just make this quick. The difference between the Department of Corrections versus the Department of Health, clarification was good. Department of Human Services, thank you, Representative Khan. But how many people are in the pipeline? How many people are have been civilly committed or do you expect to be following through in this process? I guess I'm wondering that because we're making some changes or are hoping to make some changes in regards to that process and in regards to sex offenders in general. I'm wondering how many people you expect to have.
Is that Mr. Questa?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a really good question because, as I said before, we were seeing a very steady pattern of growth in our sex offender population, for example, of about 30 a biennium, and it went to 100. We know that this is in part a result of the referral of all level 3 sex offenders to our program, and we assume that there's some catch-up. So we have, in our growth projections, some leveling off to about 25 a year. But we've been testifying on our operating request that we think that there is a lot of risk in the numbers we have available to us, because at 1 year of change, where there is a lot of unusual or changes of events and behavior in that year, it's very difficult to draw a pattern from. So projections for the purposes of operating expenses has been a projection of an increase to the sex offender program of about 25 a year. That said, both for the nursing facility and for the sex offender treatment program, we are trying to be more aggressive with bed capacity. The reason we're being more aggressive with bed capacity than operations requests is because it takes a long time to construct beds. We can come back and be wrong on the operational side and come back to this body and say we are wrong, or the pattern was different, we may need more, we may need less, and that can be responded to fairly quickly, but we can't do with that with bed capacity. And so we're not trying to hold any risk in bed development.
Representative Rod, do you have any further questions? I see no further questions, and are we ready for adjournment?
We're close. I think we should just make the announcement that tomorrow, I think we are selecting regents at high noon. Is it high noon or 12:30? High noon?
Mm-hmm.
We'll go at high noon. So we're selecting regents at high noon, and assuming that that gets over prior to 2:15, we'll meet here at 2:30. If it goes past 2:15, we'll meet in this room 15 minutes after session, and at that time take up House File Number 3. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it the chair's intent that we'll vote on the bill tomorrow, and do you have an estimated time on how long we might go?
15 minutes. My preference would be one thing, and how long we might go is another, but I think we have to leave by the midnight under House rules, or it depends on how long members want to discuss the bill. If there are any amendments that we have to evaluate and call a recess, we can go evaluate them some more, or what happens there. I would not want to venture a guess, but hope to have you home by the 10 o'clock news.
Thank you.
With that, we're adjourned. Oh, no, we're not. We're almost adjourned. Close, but not quite. I saw that hand in time.
Thank you.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you asking amendments to be brought to you at a certain time, or any written amendments versus verbal amendments? What's the rule on that as far as you're concerned?
Didn't you get your email on the rules, Representative Broad? No, you didn't. We never sent them out. That was a trick question. That was a trick question. I'm sorry, and I apologize. That was not nice.
You didn't ask if I read them.
Oh, good point. Absolutely. Considering that no one has a bill in front of them, it's very hard to say, boy, we got a 24-hour rule or something like that. As a courtesy, if members do have amendments that they wish to offer, it would be considerate to have them to Ms. Peltola tomorrow by 10 a.m. Having said that, I think that if we come and there's a discussion and all of a sudden somebody looks at that and says, holy cow, I can't believe that we've left this out. It's the most important project. We need more junk in it for Albert Lee. If that were to be said, I think we'll deal with the amendment and make the language work later. I'm not a big 24-hour rule person because things will come up and folks haven't had a long time to look at it. And so flexibility, I think, is the key. And I'm hoping for no amendments, but that's, optimistic. So with that, members, we will adjourn.